This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code Greg88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code Greg88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Welcome, everybody. This is going to be, I'm counting, episode 3 of the Wombo Combo podcast with myself and the other guy, Monkeys Forever.
That's
how you
me.
Doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
It's morning, but I'm pretty good. Had some busy days and a lot of sitting in an apartment during quarantine. So, overall, yeah. Ukraine's pretty fun, pretty good. But, you know,
what time is it there?
It is 7 in the morning.
Oof.
Yeah.
Early bird.
We'll probably have to figure out, like, another time. But, you know, this one worked for today because I was like, okay, yeah. I'm going to bed at, like, 1. But I'm definitely passing out right after this, you know. Like, I got my 5 hours, but there's going to be, like, a 2-hour nap.
Yeah, you know, I feel you.
Sometime after this. But I like naps, so there's nothing wrong with...
I love naps. I mean, honestly, who doesn't like naps? Anyone who says they don't like naps, they're just straight up lying.
Dude. Tell Callie that, man. She's like, why do you always nap? And I was like, why do I have to explain this? I shouldn't have to explain why I always want to nap. Like, naps are just incredible. Like, if I did my work for the day or whatever, or if I, like, woke up, got some stuff done, and then I know I start streaming in, like, 2 or 3 hours, why can't I nap?
Exactly. I mean, that's your reward for doing a day's good work.
Yeah, and it should be something that, like, all of us strive for, meaning, like... You know, if you can create a lifestyle for yourself where you're allowed to nap, like
that's peak existence, right?
It
there.
Is. That is final form. So I shouldn't even have to, like, you understand. I don't have to convince you.
I get it, yeah, yeah.
If people at home don't get it, then you know, open your mind to bigger and better things. But the topic of discussion today was going to be predominantly about just pubs in general. And I was going to be comparing a lot about the dynamics of North American and EU pubs, your experience with them, talk a little bit about the differences between pubs, like, in general, like when it comes to, like, competitive Dota to pubs, whether or not that's skills, whether or not that's, like... You know, the dynamic of the game, like different skill sets required, all that kind of stuff. So first and foremost, I think I've gotten your opinion before, but let's just update myself and everyone. What is your opinion on North American pubs compared to European?
My opinion, well, I'm pretty much just pubs in general. I am of the opinion that unless they're, like, pretty much 10 like competitive player, like 10 competitive players in the entire game, like 5 on each team. And what I mean by that is people who actually understand or, like, have been on teams before and understand, like, you know, the competitive Dota concepts.
Not people
and stuff
who are
like
good enough to currently be playing competitive. So you're including me in this group.
Yes. You would be included. Like, people who have played before and understand, like, you know, the team concepts that, you know, pretty much, like, the majority of, or pretty much every single competitive player knows and, like, understands and, you know, applies on a consistent basis. I feel like pubs in general are just, like, they just end up being a shit show. Even if there's, like, if there's just, like, one person on each team that just, like, doesn't quite grasp those concepts, I feel like it makes the entire game feel, like, very alienated from competitive play, in my opinion.
I'm in the total agreement that like one or two guys can completely ruin the game. Like, meaning that the entire dynamic of the game is changed by one or two players. I think a lot of people will ask me, you know, like, they'll make stupid comments like, you know, BSJ, why is Weeha on Team Nygma? He's so bad. You know, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, at the end of the day, every competitive team is defined by their weakest player. And like, Nygma almost always has good results. And like, you know, if they had one actual bad player on their team, they would suck. Like, that's just how it is. Like, if you put, you know, Team Nygma and replace Weeha with, like, a 3K mid laner, they won't win a single game. Like, they're not going to win a single game. You know, like, all I'm saying is for people, it's not like traditional sports to me where the teams are best defined by their, like, all-stars, right? I think teams in Dota are best defined by their weakest player or, like, their weakest part of their game or whatever, because so much of it is exploitable, like in so many ways that if you don't have all your boxes checked, you're just going to get railed. So my point being, though, is in a pub, you could have like 9 pros and like 1 bot account and the game would look, you know,
it would be so one-sided,
unrecognizable, because, right? Like to the dynamic of the game. And a lot of people don't really realize that. I try to explain that a lot. It really is something to me that only applies at the highest level. But it does apply like in a 4K game. If you have like one guy griefing or one smurf, right? Like the dynamic of the game will change. But my main difference between like NA and EU so far, like, so obviously people know that the average like MMR is higher in EU, right? Like if I'm ranked 40 in NA, when I get my EU rank, it's going to be like 180 or 200. So, all that means is that the player pool at the highest level is larger.
It's bigger.
And so what I've noticed is I've had much more games on average that don't have one or two shitters in them. Like
So I mean, for sure, like I've never argued that, like, you know, you would have a higher percentage of, like, you know, quote unquote good games and like EU or whatever. But it's just like, you know, I've queued EU plenty, even from you or that, like where I am right now, and people, like, whenever I lose a game, people are like, "Oh, haha, EU is so much, there's too hard for a rank 20 NA player and stuff." And it's like I get in these games with, you know, rank 400 EU players, and it's just not good Dota. I don't know what to really say about it. Like, nothing in the game looks good, and people are trying to like make it seem like I'm losing because I'm going to eat or like I'm playing an EU game because it's like too high skill, when in reality I'm just getting frustrated because nobody is making like correct Dota moves or
so
whatever.
So like I've had I'd say on my main so far I've played like 15 or 20 games. I've had two or three that I played like really poorly. Like I know that for a fact. I lost two or three games because I didn't play very well. My other two or three losses, like, out of the, I've won more than I've lost, have been straight up, like, people griefing. Like, it's like, it doesn't change. People have this, you know, I was in the honeymoon phase where, for whatever reason, the first, like, 3 or 4 days I played, I was getting, like, Miracle on my team, and, you know, people like this, right? And I was like, and every game was, like, really good. And, but it still stands for me that there's a lot of things that the problem with me for NA pubs is that straight up, if I'm laning against a rank 300 offlaner, if I'm carry or like vice versa, if I'm offlane, I hardly learn anything because like they just suck. Like, and I'm not trying to be, you know, pretentious, like I'm on this hill up here, right? But like the laning mechanics in NA are so much worse. Like I've actually learned so much about laning in general in EU because like I don't know. I feel like it rubs down. You know, like if all of the top 100 players do it, then eventually like 3/4 of the top 200 are gonna do it. Then like, you know, it's gonna bleed down a bit. It feels like even the rank 300 players, even if they end up being toxic shitters in EU, have like really good lane mechanics. Like the supports and shit, they right click me for like every creep. You know, like all every creep I go for, I get right click like 4 times. And if I don't like creep aggro to the like maximum potential and all that kind of stuff, I'm taking a shit ton of damage. So,
yeah.
And every time I'm like out of position, I get punished. It's like pretty noticeable there. I feel like when I was in NA, I only got that when I was on a team, right? Like I only got that when I was playing against.
Well, I mean, in NA, like it's definitely you don't run into the player or like you definitely there's like a very specific time frame I feel in North America for when you can actually queue for high MMR clubs, and that's typically from like maybe roughly 5 or 6 p.m. Eastern to like midnight to 1 a.m. or so. Yeah. And usually in that time slot, you'll get like, you know, the good pubs, the good players. And like, you know, maybe you're not getting 10 players on each team who, you know, are going to like are going to make the game feel like an in-house league or whatever. But you're going to usually get like at least, you know, 3 or 4 high MMR players on average on both teams. And those are games I feel I always learn a lot from, and I always enjoy playing because, you know, typically it's high skill enough that like, you know, you can mess around, you can figure new shit out, like you can test things and stuff like that, and that like the laning in games like that. I mean, like. You can say NA has bad laning as much as you want, but like, you know, definitely I would say like the top 70 players or, you know, top 100 players or whatever in NA, like you get really good lanes.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though, is it's like the consistency of practice, right? Like a very small portion of the player. Like you said, I agree. It's like if I'm getting a good game in NA, it's literally the same players, right? Like every single game.
That's very true.
And it is a bit frustrating for me with that. Because half of it's like knowing exactly how this particular player is going to lane. Like that's what it feels like for me is what is important in MMR and NA a lot. I personally struggle a lot because, you know, I'm still figuring it out, right? Like I've been doing a little bit of carry, a little bit of offlane in the last year or so. And in NA, I feel lost. Like for me personally, the style like after the lane and even in the lane, like, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, it doesn't work with me. It's like, it was so funny because I realized it like 4 or 5 days in of EU pubs. And I was just like, every single time that it felt like something could be done in the game, debatably, you know, I'm not saying it's always right to be doing something, but people in EU are just fucking running at each other, dude. Like, whether or not it's in the lane, whether or not it's in like the 10, 15, 20, 30 minute mark, people are just fucking colliding nonstop. Yeah, and I'm like, go ahead.
I would actually say that's like that is kind of how I would categorize like the main difference between North American pubs and EU pubs is that NA is more focused on, you know, that like greedy AFK farm, like play 3 lanes, like literally get EG. As much as you can off of the yes, EG style of like just farm.
It's not
farm,
a coincidence,
farm,
by the way.
And yeah, and then EU pubs are like literally EU players to a fault will group up and just like run around as 5, like and just and it's literally like the thing is when one team groups up as 5 and runs around the map. Pretty much the only way to counteract that nowadays is to group up as 5 and run at them.
I was about to say, so what do you think, which one do you think would beat the other? Right?
Like, I definitely would say the EU style would shit on NA because NA players like refuse to group up like so hard basically because unless like you have someone on the mic constantly saying like, hey, we got to do this. Go. We have alts. Do this. Like unless you have that leadership in North America, you never get everyone to be on the same page. But in EU, it's literally like, you know, run around as 5 and then you see the other team running as 5. So you got to go as 5. And then you just, it's just like literally fighting nonstop.
The funny thing about that you mentioned it is like, I was going to say the same thing, right? I was going to say that to me, the NA playstyle is arguably just worse because if you were to put the two playstyles against each other, the NA style just wouldn't work. Like the NA style only works if both teams are like buying into it, right? Like I feel like OG has kind of like molded the European style to what it is now. Like, yeah, it was already a bit of that, but I feel like now it's literally like I've had games where people are pretty good at this, by the way, in EU, where if they're losing, they actually just split push like crazy, like where they just will not fight you at all, and they'll like do their best to draw out the game. And the kill score is like 40-8, you know, like in favor of the team that's winning, because like the team that's behind is just scrambling to get farm and like split you up. In the meantime, the one team's like farming a carry, and then the other four are just sweeping the map back and forth, just killing people like over and over and over. And I'm like, that's what would happen in NA if one team was playing like that. It's like
I mean, it is, and like you can definitely you can notice it in North American pubs as well, because so like, you know, while EU does like grouping play style a lot, and NA is more of like, you know, the EG like farm the whole map play style. The other thing I would like to note is that when you get teams full of like South Americans are just like their play style has just been aggressive for literally like the last 6 years
all
or whatever.
Aggression
been,
in
like
any
all
shape
that
form,
like
yeah.
like they don't do it in like necessarily coordinated manner. They just like they'll make like three plays on the map at the exact same time in three different areas. So like instead of them like moving as five, they're just like, you know, they're just creating chaos everywhere. So
they're really good at saying, like, okay, I know my carry is pressuring top. I'm going to also pressure mid and bottom at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. So you also kind of run into like a clash between regions there, because, you know, sometimes in NA games, you get like four or five NA players on one team and four or five SA players on the other team. And it's just kind of like you can usually see like the difference in play style in like when you see like the two regions.
Dude, I always feel so freaking lost when I play with SA players on my team. Like, and it's not because I think they're bad. It's because like
I know that
style for me. Like, I like to be aggressive, but it's in the form that EU does it, not in SA. And I think that's why SA's kind of made a name for themselves, like in the recent year or two, with, you know, teams like Infamous placing top eight and stuff. It's just like that style isn't, in my opinion, worse than EU's. It's actually just a different version.
It's not. Exactly. It's just it's a unique style that SA has kind of cultivated for themselves.
And I think like, a lot of these EU teams are like, what the hell's going on? You know?
well, that's something that I find so funny. Whenever I have spoken to like EU like pro players or whatever, they always like talk about or talk down on like NA or whatever or like NA and SA, and it's like they watch these like NA versus SA games, and it just looks like a shit show, and you're just like, what's even happening? But then you play against these SA teams, and like, and then you understand like just how much pressure they're applying to you at all times, and you're just like, oh god, I just like have to do something. Like,
you have like a guy up in your face at like 5 minutes. He's like underneath your tier one or like between tier one, tier two, and you're like, are we not going to kill this guy? And then you like realize that like two other things are going on the map, so your team actually can't help you. And that's like what SA does a lot. I would say like they put you in a lot of those situations where you're like team, and like, you know, your team's also getting dove or something. It's like, it's very interesting that the way they choose to capitalize on that kind of thing. And I feel like in EU, like, it's just like we've kind of said, more coordinated aggression in a way that like it's definitely predictable. Like, I think EU's predictable in, like, a healthy way for me. Like, I like the way it works, because I'm like, if I was going to get ran at by four heroes, where would they go right now? It's like, you know, and, like, if you understand the map, if you're learning to get better at Dota and all that kind of stuff, like, what each objective means, you can have an idea of, like, okay, the enemy team, they need to kill somebody at this tower to take it. You know, they're probably going to go here. People throw some wrenches in the equation every now and then, but I would say EU, if you're playing like fundamentally, is like very predictable, which to me fits my playstyle way better. Like, I'm like, okay, I'd rather have a good idea of what they're doing based on my knowledge of the game. And in NA, I really have no idea half the time what my team or the other team's doing. And if they're SA, I'm getting ran at it all fronts. So, you know, it's like unpredictable. So for like, it's just funny because that aspect of like adjusting to the game, I personally don't have in EU. Like, I have to adjust to the pace because I haven't played it ever really. But once I'm like kind of getting used to the play style that people go with in EU, I personally am like, oh, okay, like, this actually makes sense to me. You know, this is how I naturally like to play. So I've personally been a much bigger fan of EU for that reason.
It's Sunday, 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 and they're coming back to the NFL with NFLSundayTicket.tv. You can stream every live out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices, plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. Never miss your favorite teams or favorite players. No matter where you live, NFLSundayTicket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE.
Have you ever heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price you would never believe. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0 and only goes up 1 cent every time someone bids. The kicker is that the auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer or the item is yours. If you go ahead and buy now, Deal Dash is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon signup, on top of their other discounts. Go to DealDash.com and use the offer code PREDICTION, PREEDICTION, or DealDash.fm/prediction, spelled the exact same way. That's DealDash, DealDash.fm/prediction, PREEDICTION. It's funny though, because in NA, my biggest issue, I know you can vouch for this, I literally saw your Broodmother game, by the way.
My double down today?
So I didn't see that you doubled down, but I saw his Broodmother game, guys. I want to be clear. He's legitimately at their base. This is like 25 minutes in. He's like 1v4, killing a hero at a time, because he's like, it's like a free brood game and you're like stomping them. You're killing like one hero at a time for like a minute and a half straight. Okay? And I swear, your team didn't show up.
Yep.
I'm like, where the fuck are they? Like, I'm not even looking. Like, he's at their base, 1v4. Where is his team? Like, where are they? Like, they weren't, like, throwing the game because, like, luckily for you, you're playing a hero that obviously you were very good at, but also a hero that is quite capable of doing everything it wants to do with literally no help, right?
Yeah.
So, it's like, it's just for me in EU, I've only had that feeling, honestly, like 10% of my games. And I've lost every single one of them. Like, not even close. Like, I'm just going to give an example for people at home who wonder what I'm talking about. So I was playing Drow Safelane. This happened yesterday. I'll give two examples. I was playing Drow Safelane and Pango offlane. Or like I had a Pango offlane. Against a Quap mid and a Doom offlane. So and the supports were active supports. I don't remember what they were. But it was Weehaw mid, right? It was Weehaw Quap mid. And he literally was just running around the map after 6 minutes, just ganking everywhere, right? And the Doom is just running at us with, like, you know, phase drums and a blink and a BKB and shit.
Yeah,
and
he just keeps buying the classic Eternal Envy co-op style.
Yes. And my Invoker is jungling, okay? Like, he's like an Exord Invoker with drums. Let's be clear. Exord Invoker, no Midas, drums, and he's jungling. And this guy's a sick Invoker player. He's like level 24 Dota Plus Invoker or some shit. Right. Like his mechanics are like insane. Mm-hmm. But he said, guys, they're coming top. And then he's like, guys, they're coming bottom. Like he's calling the miscalls. And we are straight up getting dove under two tier ones at the same time at like 6 minutes in. And and he's just jungling. And I'm like, you have a Drow and you have a Pango. And the Pango is in a bad lane matchup. What are you expecting to occur here? Like, are you expecting us to just sit under tier twos while you hit jungle creeps? Like, the thing about Dota is it's like a war of resources, right? It's like you have to push and pull back and forth against the opponent to fight for your ground, right? You have to stand your ground. You have to fight for the farming area that you need.
I mean, like, the best way to think about Dota, like, as like a constant or like in a constant state is like, how much of the map do you control and how much of the map does the enemy control? And like, you know, you can usually tell like by how many jungles you control and what jungles you're kind of blocking from them. Like, all right, we're controlling like 70% of the map right now. It's a 50-50 map. All right, we're losing 30-70 right now. Like, you
also have to ask yourself if there's like anything you can do to change that. Like, are you capable of changing that yet?
Yeah.
And it's like, if is the status quo of like how much you have and how much they have okay with you? You know, like, I think that that's the questions I like to talk about asking myself. And the main thing I think going into a game that people can take to learn also is like, based on the opponent heroes, how much are they going to be pushing into our territory? How early is it going to be? How consistent is it going to be? Like, is it a lineup that's based off ultimates where, like, when all their ultimates are off cooldown, they're going to run at us? Or is it a lineup like Queen of Pain and Doom that are just going to keep being in our face the entire game? Needless to say, we were in our base at 18 minutes that game. You know, we were stuck in our base at 18 minutes.
It was one of those shitty feeling games.
Yeah, and I was like,
waiting for it to end.
And I just didn't understand. And then my other example, lastly, would be that I was a PA. So, like, another hero that's like, just needs like 10 minutes. You know, like, I need like 10 minutes. And then I had a mid Ember, I think, like something like that, like Ember or Void Spirit. And my offlane Slardar, who, it was like his job to like be active that game, went straight Midas. Needless to say, we lost all three tier ones in like 12 minutes, and then the game was over. And this guy
said,
what
about the bashes, BSJ?
Yeah, what about the attack speed on the bashes? And so what people don't understand when they're like watching on my stream and stuff is they're like, BSJ, are you saying Midas is bad on Slardar? And I'm like, I've seen people buy Midas on Slardar. It's not that Midas is a bad item on Slardar, but everyone in the game has like a responsibility based on that specific game of like how much they're supposed to get done in the game. You know, like, are you supposed to be this aggressive? You know, like, you have to worry about losing your towers. You have to worry about taking their towers. And it's like, if somebody else can do that, then you can maybe prioritize your own game, farm a bit more and stuff. But like, if you're the one responsible for it, and then you go Midas while, oh, I was against Boxy, Sand King, by the way. He went like first item Crimson Guard and,
you know. I know Boxy.
I was like, this Slardar was like bitching to the team in like 15 minutes and I pinged his items and I pinged Sand King's items. And I was like, do you say this? You know, like, fuck.
Well, I think that's one thing that a lot of Dota players kind of struggle in, like, being able to realize exactly how the game is going to progress, like based on draft. Like, something that every good player will do is as soon as, like, when you're in the strategy game of each game, like, you're looking at the heroes on both teams and like you're thinking to yourself about, all right, how's this game going to progress? Are they going to be like the aggressors? Like, how are the lanes going to go? Like, you kind of like think about all of this stuff really, really quickly at the beginning of each game, and then you come to the conclusion of like, all right, this is exactly what I have to do in this game. Like, you know, if I'm a Sand King, maybe they have a super aggressive like tower push lineup, and it would be more beneficial for me to have a max Sandstorm at level 7 instead of going like 404, which, I mean, realistically speaking, probably would not see that exact situation very frequently, but I'm just using it as an example of like of how volatile Dota can be, and just like you can never just like get complacent with your knowledge or like your ideas about the game. Like I feel like so many people just autopilot in Dota because like they feel like they've already accomplished like all of like the difficult things.
Yeah, they've learned the lessons
like
they have to learn, kind of.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, I'm really good mechanically at Dota, so I don't have to like think critically anymore. And it's like, well, no, you do, because the game is ever evolving and changing.
You never
like,
have
you
to
know,
stop
like,
thinking critically in Dota. If you're not trying to think critically, like, and you want to improve, Dota is not the game for you.
Yeah, it really isn't. And I personally kind of like really came to that realization like a couple years ago, where I just like, you know, you're just getting lazy, Jaren. Like, you just have to like keep paying attention and keep like thinking and like
I can relate to this
pushing yourself. Like, I know it's not an easy thing to do, because like there's so many items in Dota and like there's so many things to really consider, like about, or like so many interactions to consider and everything. But like, it really, it goes such a long way if you actually know what you're playing for in each game of Dota.
Dude, and it makes it so much more enjoyable too. Like, for me, it's just like a puzzle that I'm like trying to solve every single game. And I think we're going to use this as a bit of a segue, but we're not going to like, I'm not going to like forcibly wrap up this conversation. It's just that I do believe that that vision of the game is exactly what differs pub players and pub games from competitive, because it is like a beautiful harmony when all five players on the team have this same vision of what the game, like what their job in the game is. And it just,
absolutely,
you know, comes together in one beautiful picture. I had like a pub game yesterday where I was offlane Legion and the opponent had like Venomancer Mag Arc Warden, right? They have three super farm heavy cores that just shove lanes and they're like super hard to fight into. Yeah. And we were down like 2k at like 9 minutes. Okay, like it was bad.
Yeah, not looking great for you.
After that, it felt like my entire team just suddenly knew exactly how to play the game of Dota. And it was beautiful. I was like, holy crap. We had to do like correct moves for 25 minutes in a row to come back in that game. Like, I could not believe it. I was like, none of it, like, there was like some communication, you know, like smoke here or go here. But like, for the most part, it's everyone just doing their individual job. And I think a lot of people don't realize when it comes to communication in Dota and in Pro Dota, it applies the same way, that telling somebody their job is kind of toxic. Like, that's not what you're supposed to do. Like, people have to understand their job such that you're now playing Dota and then communicating like the who initiates or...
Yeah, basically, like, all the talk about, like, all of that stuff, like, you know, your role in the game and, like, stuff like that should either be done before the game or after the game. Like, in the game itself, everything should be talking about the future of the game and where you're expecting to go from there and, like, you know, what movements are you trying to make to like get you to the most ideal map position and like whatever. And obviously it doesn't have to be consistent comms or whatever, but like, it's just kind of like that is the purpose of comms, because everyone should be so focused on accomplishing what they're supposed to be doing in the game that like that there isn't too much of a need for that, like it to be a constant flow of comms, if that makes sense.
Absolutely,
but like,
it's
more just they keep everyone on track, you know, little reminders of like, oh, this hero is missing, we saw Roche it going this way.
In 2 minutes
exactly. Or like, all right, their alt is on cooldown for another minute. What are we going to do? Like, how are we going to take advantage in this time frame? And like, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think, what was I going to say? I had exactly what I wanted to say. Oh, the game is just too fast. Like, people don't realize at the highest level, if you've never played it, like, that's not like talking down to people who aren't at the highest level. Like, the thing that increases as you go higher and higher is just how fast people make decisions, how fast they execute plays, right?
Yeah.
And if you talk about any of this job stuff during the game, you're just like falling behind every second you're spending talking on it. And like, by the time you've like communicated to this guy what his job is, he's dead already. You know, it's like, so that's why, like, when people ask, like, why can't you communicate that kind of stuff? It's just the game. Like, you only have so limited time in the game to establish what needs to be done. And if the opponent's already making the decision in 2 seconds and it takes me 12 seconds to explain to this guy what he's supposed to be doing, or, you know, him to explain to me, whatever, it's just too slow, right?
I mean, it just hurts the entire game in general, because I mean, like, no matter how good you are at Dota, no matter how ingrained like your farming patterns are, or you know, your map awareness, like how much you force yourself to look at the mini map, like no matter how much all of this stuff is just like subconscious play to you, Yeah, that like whenever you have like a conversation not about Dota, like it throws everything off.
Dude,
like maybe you don't
does.
Look at the mini map for 5 seconds because like you're talking to someone, or like maybe you miss a camp stack because you're just getting distracted. Like all of these things like can just get messed up by like just having random things being discussed.
There's
like,
always
for no
something
reason.
To think about every yeah. single second. That if you take like 4 seconds to think about something else, like you said, I would say it takes me like 5 times as long to catch up as it did of the time I took slacking. Like if I took 4 seconds yeah, where yeah. I wasn't thinking, it'll take me at least 20 seconds to like resume, you know, current update with the game, you know, like what's like,
yeah, yeah,
because like sometimes it's like you saw a guy go mid and you know he's either going to go bottom or top from there, and then he briefly shows on a ward going top, but you weren't looking at the minimap for that 4 seconds, so you actually
yeah,
don't know
exactly.
that he's going top. So it's yeah. like, you know, you're like, okay, I knew this guy was mid, but now I have no idea where he is. And somebody
yeah,
like,
sure. and then you feel really uncomfortable when you shouldn't feel uncomfortable because like you should have been able to see what's happening or whatever.
Yeah. And so with that moving forward as a segue, did you watch any of the close qualifiers for the Omega League that was currently going on the last week?
I didn't actually get to watch any of the games, but I heard about them.
Okay. So I figured the nice thing about this situation that we got currently is that you're playing in the North American Omega League, and
yeah.
I'm casting the European one. So
although the NA Omega League doesn't actually start for another 6 days or something,
yes.
the tournament that started for us was the
you
ESL,
have the ESL
Thailand,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
So my idea was that first and foremost, we're going to talk about your competitive week for the people at home. Talk about Monkeys and Gunner and the crew. You guys mm-hmm. did take a series off of Quincy Crew, right?
Yeah.
And they did have a stand-in. So
they did.
I know you guys know the implication of that, especially when it's their captain, right? Like I heard you and Gunner on stream both being like, yeah, they had a stand-in, you know.
Yeah.
But that kind of goes toe-to-toe with hand-in-hand with exactly what we've been saying, how like one
yeah,
player changing
exactly.
can literally be like, yeah, it doesn't really mean much to us, you know, that we beat them. You guys have been doing well against them in general. Like it's gone about even between
yeah.
the two teams. But in terms of ESL Thailand, what's coming up for you guys? Like what's remaining in that tournament?
So we have every team has only played one best of three so far. So we're still like pretty early in the group stage or whatever, but we're gonna be playing like two more matches. Hold on, I'm trying to find the thing because
you're supposed to know your team schedule, Monkeys.
But yeah, we're playing like Beast Coast and Crazy this week, so we have those two teams coming up, and then the Omega League, as I said, starts in like 6 days or whatever. So.
What do you like about, like, do you like the format of these online leagues where you're getting to play like three competitive games a week, or is that like too much, too consistent?
I mean, I love having the online or like I love having online leagues like this because I feel like it brings out the more competitive side of teams. From my experience of like, you know, all of the random teams I've been on over the years, is like scrims, you're basically trying to mimic competitive games in scrims as best as you can, you know, as far as comms go, as far as like, you know, tone of voice, level of like energy and like all this stuff, like you're trying to mimic
emulate
how your team is
acting, right?
Emulate that, or emulate, that's a better word, but you're trying to get that same or like similar atmosphere or whatever. And so what the online leagues do, in my opinion, is they bring that out of teams more so, and they kind of get the teams to you know, show their best stuff, or like, if that makes sense, because scrims are all about practice and like testing stuff, and
you can say you're gonna motivate yourself, but scrims are just never gonna be the same, right?
yeah exactly. Like actually competing is like, it's the best practice. So I really like that aspect of it, because especially at least for our team, you know, maybe Crazy and Business Associates and Quincy,
they're like
they
I've
love
played
scrims
enough of these
or something
damn
like
games.
I don't know, man, but for our team at least, like, it's night and day when you compare our scrim comms to our officials comms. So I really like that there's so many games and tournaments going on, because it just feels like good practice, and it feels like games that we can actually look at and like go over, because we're genuinely giving our best, and we're genuinely, you know, trying to figure out exactly how we should be playing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so to segue from your league to my league real quick here, what are like the three most broken heroes in the drafts right now? Like, what is being picked, like nearly picked or banned every game in NA right now? I'm curious what the meta is.
Well, for it's a bit unique for us, because every single team that we played against for the past like 2 weeks now have first banned Darkseer Doom against us every single time.
Okay.
Because because we have won. I believe we've won like every game with either of those heroes.
Okay,
in the past 2 weeks.
So I will say that Doom is just, in my opinion, the most broken.
Doom
hero
is just bonkers.
Like, Doom like, is no. Like, I'm pretty sure in my last 10 pubs, Doom's won 9 of them. Like, I'm sure like
Doom
this hero doesn't lose. Like, I have a Doom on my team,
on any role too.
Yeah. Like, I had a 4, I had a 2, I had a 3. I've had everything but a 5 or a 1. I think I've had consistently 2s, 3s, and 4s Dooms. I've had a 5 Doom in my games before, but it didn't win. So my point being, though, is that I think it's cool that the meta somewhat is similar with competitive when it comes to the most broken heroes. Like, every region, the most broken heroes kind of just reign supreme. Like, no matter what your play style is, if a hero is completely broken, it's going to be in every game. When it came to go ahead.
I was going to say, like, to add on to that is also, like, you'll see teams, like, respect certain players a lot as well, as far as, like, or maybe it's disrespect. With me, for example, in, like, Batrider and Broodmother, like, you will see teams ban those heroes against me all the time. Like, even if it's a game that I would, there's, like, no way I would ask for, like, either of those heroes, you still sometimes see those heroes banned. And I think it's kind of disrespect in my sense, because it's people basically being like, you can't play anything else, so we're just going to ban these heroes that you're comfortable on or whatever. But, like, for some people, I do think, like, they do have specialty heroes that will get target banned, even if they're not necessarily overpowered in, like, in the meta as a whole.
Yeah, so I'm going to go the flip side of this. Okay, I've had this, like, 10-minute segue being built, and we keep... It's not a problem, but I need this... No, it's not a problem. I'm just like, before I forget to ever segue this, I need to make sure I do. So, yeah. I watched the close qualifiers for Omega League, and then I'm going to ask my question after I make this comment here. And the close qualifiers were interesting, because there was, like, a couple invited teams to the close qualifiers, like Cyber Legacy, Viking GG, Hellraisers... And they, 5 men were not invited, but they were one of one. Spoiler alert, they ended up qualifying. But then a lot of the other teams were like kind of just stacks, like just, you know, random teams thrown together.
Yeah.
And you also had bait. Yikes. But moving on. basically, what I saw in the close qualifiers, and it's a cool thing for people to learn from if you're looking to like kind of learn from competitive Dota of all tiers, was seeing teams that are like solid tier 2, maybe strong tier 3 teams playing against stacks. Because at the end of the day, the average MMR between the players isn't that big of a difference. You're not playing with like all the top 25 players, you know, in EU on the same game. But it was so clearly noticeable in the drafts, as well as just the overall team play, that these more established teams have just had more time to figure things out. Perfect game that it kind of talked about pubs, and you talked about like your vision of the game, was that like right now I'd say Anti-Mage is one of the most broken carries. And if I was thinking about Anti-Mage, a lot of people, like if you're like a very new player or like don't watch too much competitive or think about Dota this way, you'd say that Anti-Mage, like, you know, he's a Battlefear hero. He's going to farm, he's going to scale and all that kind of shit. What I think about with Anti-Mage and how I've at least started thinking about Dota a lot the last year is like, what can go wrong if I pick this hero? Like, you know, if I pick this hero, what's his weaknesses? What can be exploited? All that kind of stuff. And Anti-Mage just has virtually no team fight participation in the first 15 minutes, offers no tower pressure, and doesn't defend his own towers. So I was like, he needs heroes with immense amount of like early game fighting potential. Like, they don't have to always fight, but they have to be able to. They have to be able to defend towers, and they have to be able to push towers. And they picked Anti-Mage, like a stack team did, with Disruptor, Undying, Night Stalker.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single one of those heroes kills creeps, kills towers, or defends towers, right? And I was like, when they picked the Anti-Mage, I was just like, they're going to lose like all their buildings in the first, you know, 10 minutes of this game. And the opponent had two picks left when they saw those four.
Mm-hmm.
Nature's Prophet, Beastmaster, right? Like, I was like, and I was just like, holy crap. Like, it's so different to see like a coordinated tier two team play against these stacks. Cause you're like, holy shit. Like the stack leaves themselves so exploitable. And then this tier two team just picks like the perfect two heroes to just shit on it. Right. It's like, that's what I learned from these games watching. And that's what I enjoyed about casting them. A lot of them were stomps, but in a strategical standpoint, you do get a lot of knowledge handed to you by watching. So, spoiler alert though, the two qualifiers were five men and Viking GG. Five men was the misery stack. So, they were a stack, but by no means a bunch of,
by no means nobody did they not understand. Like,
they understood the drafting strategy of Dota. They've only been a team for like 2 weeks, but each individual definitely has had plenty of experience, in competitive. So moving forward, the Mortal Division, there's two divisions in EU. There's the Divine Division and the Immortal Division. And the Divine Division pretty much had all the other teams that were in the close qualifiers other than those two that are going to be in it. So it's going to be like a lot of that similar tier of Dota. And then you have the Immortal Division, which is going to be literally those two teams and all the household names, right? You have Enigma, Liquid, Secret.
Honestly, the Immortal Division is going to be basically like the a Western DAC almost.
Dude, it's like, scary, man. Like, it's like even EG is participating tournament. In it. So I know you're really looking at the list right now. So with that in mind, you know, your division's coming up at the same time as theirs. But if you had to give a favorite for you, that's not Secret.
I would have to say Secret.
No, that's not Secret. Who would you say is your favorite? That's not Secret.
I mean, I don't know. I would have to go with, I would say either OG or Alliance.
Damn. OG's back or what?
I mean, I feel like OG will be getting back into the groove of things. Like, maybe not right now. Like, I don't know. It's really difficult to predict which teams are going to like start caring, if that makes sense. Because like OG, obviously they have three two-time TI winners on their team right now. Yeah, three. So like obviously motivation might just be really low with them right now. You would think a $500,000 prize pool would be able to get
them back. It's pretty massive.
Would be able to pull them into being focused a bit. But I mean, again, like Dota, the reason Dota's so beautiful is anybody can beat anybody when you're looking at the highest levels or whatever. Like in EU, I would even say like the tier two teams have a chance of beating a lot of these beating or taking games off of a lot of these teams.
This is Team Liquid's time to shine, man. Aiden is gonna do it, dude. This
I would love to see that. I'm great friends with all of them, man.
Like, they're great guys. It's really funny. I'm like always rooting for them, and they're always like they're always like super hit or miss. They either get like top four or just like flop. I've talked to them. Somebody I don't remember what pro player was talking about this, but I think it was Crit. Where like some players, they require, you know, 12 games a day to be at their peak form, while other players, if they just make sure they're playing Dota at all, like they'll maintain, right?
Yeah.
Liquid is the team that if they are not pubbing 12 games a day, they suck. This is not my words. This is their words. Like they have openly admitted this. So it's like that is why a team like that, you'll see such drastically, you know, varying performances. But I'm they're gonna be my dark horse. Team Liquid is I think, you know, they're quite capable of just whipping out some six series against like even the top tier teams. But if I was having to go, I would say Team Nygma. I think they're looking really good right now. So I, dude, I've played with Miracle and Pubs, man. That guy is so freaking good, dude. The guy just first picked Lena and was like 20-0. I was like in like a top 100 game. I was like, what the fuck? Like,
I mean, Miracle has always been one of the most mechanically skilled, if not the most mechanically skilled.
It was like the worst Lena game ever, man.
Yeah.
It was a terrible Lena game. And I'm like, I mean, obviously, because he first picked it. But like, I was just like, what? Like,
yeah, dude, I mean, Miracle takes an inch and goes a mile. Man.
I think I've learned recently, like in the last 6 months, maybe even more recent, that the way to become a 10th pick gamer, like Miracle, meaning like you in competitive, he's given a lot of the last pick, right?
Yeah.
It's to just first pick it and play it whenever, right? Like, that he first picks his hero pretty much every game, and he's ranked 12 EU, right? Like, that's crazy.
I think it goes a long way in a lot of senses, because like if you first pick your hero in every game, like you're getting used to playing that hero in like the hardest situation, like on average, the opponent should be countering you like really, really hard, like no matter what your role is. And a huge benefit of like getting used to playing Dota in or playing a hero in Dota in like the worst scenario or like the worst situation you can basically come up with is that when you if you get really good at the hero in the worst situation, then when you play that hero in like mediocre or good, even good situations, you're just like,
it's hyperbolic time chamber, man.
Dota is so easy. Yeah. Like I can actually just do anything I want now. Like,
yeah, dude, I played Phaser's Void yesterday, first pick in a really high MMR game. And I was against Beastmaster Lion, Rubick Coddle, and a Spectre. Dude, that was the hardest Void game I've ever played.
That's a rough one.
Dude, I swear to you, I time walked into Chrono and got insta lifted or hexed like six times that game. And I was like, fuck, am I ever going to preemptively BKB or what? Like, fuck. Like, it's like one of those where the fight's in chaos and you think people are like, you know, distracted and shit. And you just time walk in and get insta stunned. And I'm like, oh my God. And then, like, you know, I get insta stunned and then there's a Coddle ulti. You know, so like I'm getting chain stunned for like 8 seconds, even though I have an SNY, and I'm like, holy crap, this game is impossible. And it was like a game where we could have still won because my team like managed to make enough space, but it was just such a hard game. And that kind of game, I'm just like, hey, man, like I said to my viewers, like I didn't play very well this game. There were a lot of things I could have done better, but damn, I learned so much this game. And I think with players like Miracle, when I watch them, what makes them tier one is that they're able to like consistently play these heroes and like all types of different heroes in the perfect game. Like they recognize the perfect game for that hero, and then they play it perfectly. And it's like,
which is such a big thing too, is like honestly just being able to recognize when you should pick a hero is like, it goes such a long way.
I feel like I win 90% of my pubs when I'm like, wow, this is the perfect game for this hero. And I know exactly what I'm going to do.
Yeah, and
that
like,
must be Miracle's life.
It's not easy to get to that point either. Yeah, like it takes a lot of just like memorization and just like
pattern
thinking about like everything. Yeah, seriously, man, it's a lot. Like it really, really is. I mean, I've been playing this game for 17 years, and I still like forget about random like matchups or like heroes that would just be like so insanely good in like the perfect game or whatever. Like, that there's just so much to always be thinking about. There's so many heroes being shit.
Dude, my last and absolute note before I wrap it up and I'll give you your closing thoughts is that in EU, I've been amazed by... I've always lost faith in losing lane heroes, like in NA. Like, if you lose your lane really bad in NA, you lost. Like, you're just going to lose because everyone's going to be farming for the 10 minutes afterwards and the opponent, like, respective role, if you're offlane, if you carry, whatever, they're just going to have, like, way more farm than you because it's snowballed, right?
Yeah.
And Darkseer is that hero. I think a lot of your team's playstyle is much more like EU's. Yeah. Like, you're very much run and gun, like, crazy aggression. And so it makes sense to me that Darkseer works for you guys. And I've never believed in Darkseer. And in my games, that hero has lost its lane miserably every freaking game and then win. It's every game. Like, and then you're just getting surged by, like, a 900 move sees Finn. And you're like, What? You know, like, this guy's got an ion shell and he's 900 move speed. So
part of the reason why we've been making Darkseer work for us as well, though, is we mainly play it as position four.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah. So we just do
like a lot of weird shenanigans with it, like every single time. And then we just like,
dude, the surge ion shell, man,
stage with it. It's just all right, we're in.
You just have to not get murdered. And it's just funny to me that in competitive or like, you know, different play styles, how different here, like you talk about all the situations hero can be. It doesn't even just have to be based on like the game or like the heroes in the game. It can be the region you're in. It's like, it's great. Like, there's just so many factors, and that's just yet another reason why you and I clearly, you know, love Dota. So
seriously, man, the game is just so beautifully unique, and like, I don't know, I feel like people forget it, and they just forget that you can infinitely explore in this game. There's so many ideas and things that you can do, and like things people have never done before still. And
that's just what Dota's about, man.
It is.
Like, we talk about this every week, and I know some people, if you do watch this podcast consistently, are going to be like, I said that last week. And it's like, but I think some messages, you know, they do have to be reiterated and really driven home to make sure you guys understand
exactly
how we truly feel about the game as a whole and all of how it ties into every subject we're going to be talking about on this podcast. So do you have any final thoughts, Monkeys, before we wrap it up for the week?
No, not really. Just happy to be playing Dota, BSJ.
You and me both. Not every individual moment am I happy to be playing Dota, but when I reflect on my days and I'm like, hey, you know, I'm happy, like, you know, going to the next day with intentions, that's, you know, like how I'm going to get better, I do very much enjoy it. So thanks for watching, everybody. Yep. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll be back next week. Schedule's not 100% consistent, but we're going to, you know, figure it
out. We'll get there. Don't worry.
The fact that I'm in Ukraine, it's making it a little weird. So we'll make sure it's around this time every Monday. Thanks for watching, everybody. Have a good one.
And one last word from our sponsors. Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball back in action, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry. See what they had to say on what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.